level.
That is the Sony 22 voice.
Test, 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 test.
What about me? Yeah. Got it? Got a level on the guitar? Okay. Maybe we should open up with a tune, you know?
Okay.
If you're not too tired.
Hold on, I'm just waking up.
Good morning. There's the other 22s on the amp. Here, I'll tap it. That's it. As I say, we've played it on the radio already. Possibly do a good morning tune for us, maybe? Wake up to.
Tell me when to start.
Why don't you hit the recorder?
Okay, rolling.
I wanted to ask you, and that is, where does your inspiration come from, you know, like your roots? It seems to me like you come from a very rhythm-oriented feeling.
Yeah, I was exposed to all kinds of music.
Yeah.
And,
maybe you could give us a rundown of your musical history, so to speak.
Well, in Japan, black jazz is big, or was when I was there. I'm sure it still is. American jazz and Latin music, and there was Elvis Presley was big, but nobody else much, you know. I didn't get exposed to all the yucky stuff, just the, you know, I liked him. And Japanese music itself, the old classical music, I like the best. And I guess what I got from all of it was rhythm more than anything else, because it's in all kinds of music, whatever the melody or scales are.
When did you start playing the guitar?
Eight years ago.
When you were 8 years ago. That's when you were here or in Japan?
I'd already been here 2 years.
And what inspired you to pick it up and learn it?
Well, I've been playing piano all my life. When I was five, my parents bought a piano. And I never studied anything, but I played it. And then when we came to the States, I didn't have a piano anymore. And when I was in college, this girl had a horrible little guitar. So I borrowed it and started plunking on it, and then I started playing guitar.
Still play piano at all?
Yeah, I'm getting back into it now.
How did you get into slide guitar?
It just came out.
Yeah. Where did you hear it first?
I don't even remember. I must have been Lightnin' Hopkins or someone like that. I didn't really listen to anybody, you know. I still don't. I like to hear people live, but I don't listen to records.
Hardly ever listen to records. What about the radio?
Never. I don't even have a radio. I have a crummy old record player.
Mm-hmm.
But no radio at all.
What, you just sort of picked up on the slide guitar?
Yeah.
Nobody's turned you on to it, or you didn't see anybody and say, oh, I want to give that kind of playing a try.
No.
Try it out. That's strange that you just sort of...
It just comes out. It's not really me. It just comes out of me.
I see. And when did you first become discovered? when did someone say to you, well, you can be a professional. You can make your living playing.
I've been playing 2 weeks, and someone said, I'll give you a job for $5 a night, which is more than I have made.
Where was that at?
After that. Oh, that was in Atlanta.
Atlanta. Where did you come from Japan to the U.S.? Where did you live at?
My parents lived in Atlanta, and I went to college in Bristol, Tennessee for almost 2 years, and I quit. Came back to Atlanta.
Were you influenced at all by any C&W music, country and western?
When I was little, I remember I used to listen to the Armed Forces Radio of the Grand Ole Opry. And I used to listen to the Carter Family and Cousin Minnie Pearl. She's not really music, but she's the one I really remember, you know.
Does that come out in your music at all, do you feel? The country influence?
Not in a pure sense. I don't think any of them come out in a pure sense. I think they come out all mixed up together.
Mm-hmm. As I say, the first time I heard your music, I thought that Ellen McElwainy was really, really influenced by rhythm and blues music. That's where I thought you got your roots from. Because I always do that. I guess I shouldn't. Should just dig it for what it is. But I always try to think, where did this person come from? Where did the inspiration, what are they trying to do, you know, communicate in music? And I always felt your music was that of a soul music almost. Not soul music, but a soul music.
I think all music comes from the soul.
I don't. I disagree, but that's neither here nor there. Maybe you could play some more.
Okay, I have to.
If you would. Yeah, that sounds interesting. What tuning was the last tune you did in?
That was D modal.
D. Before you do that, I have one more question for you. I'll break your train of thought. You said the first time you were playing, somebody said, I'll give you $5 a night. That was in Atlanta?
Uh-huh.
And then what happened from there?
Oh, then I played in Atlanta for about a year.
Where at? What kind of places did you work
in? Beer joints. I started out in a coffee house sort of place. That was $5 a night. Then I was in a couple of gin mills, and they were $25 a night.
And just you by yourself without a band? Were you playing through an amp at that time?
I had a nylon string guitar.
Uh-huh.
And then...
Well, you weren't playing slide then.
Oh, no.
What were you doing? Just.
I haven't the faintest idea. I don't remember.
Was it the same kind of material you're doing now, or?
It was the same type of thing, but it wasn't. No, it wasn't like it is.
Was it your original stuff, or?
No, it's mostly other people's.
Uh huh. What would you call the kind of music you were doing then? Sort of folk oriented.
Simply because it wasn't electric, yeah.
See, what I'm getting at is how you developed or metamorphosized into where you're at now, you know, what you started out at and why you, why you're playing a steel guitar with slide. And.
Well, I'm playing electrically because I got a group together and I couldn't hear myself.
Uh-huh.
And I never stopped playing electrically.
I see.
Because I like it better. But when I first started, no, I wouldn't say I was folk. But I wasn't... I wasn't blues or anything either. You can't really play blues on a nylon string.
A lot of finger picking? And
no, I never did get into that. It was more flamenco strumming, but not classical flamenco strumming.
Uh-huh. Sort of Latin influence, perhaps.
Yeah, more that than anything else.
How come you do? I've noticed that, too, by listening to your records. There's a lot of, especially with the conga player that plays with you, you have a strong Latin feel to a lot of your tunes. You do a couple in Spanish language, don't you? A couple of your tunes.
Well, one is in African.
African?
Ghana.
Yeah. Well, sort of sounds Spanish to me. You don't do any Spanish tunes?
No.
Oh, well, that must be the African one.
I used to do a couple of Spanish tunes back, way back then.
What happened from Atlanta in the beer joints? Then what happened?
Then I came to New York. And,
New York,
And played with people at the Café Agogo, the people that were playing there. That's when I made $1.50 a night, you see. You move up.
Was that like Hootenanny night? Or?
Oh, no. I was the opening act.
You were the warm-up act,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah, for 8 months, for $1.50 a night.
$1.50 a night?
Oh, sure. And I had been making $25 a night in Atlanta. Well, that was about 5 or 6 years ago.
$1.50 a night. Who were you playing with? And, who was playing on the same bill as you?
Everybody. I played with Jimi Hendrix for quite a while, and he came back and played on my sets with me and stuff. And then there was, just everybody you can think of. Muddy Waters, John Hammond, Siegel Schwal, let me think, Richie Havens, everybody.
You were warming up for him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to put stuff together and play on my sets. Then one time I had Richie Havens playing trap drums and Elvin Bishop playing guitar.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was Harvey Brooks on bass. I forget who it was. It must have been Harvey. And we used to put together crazy bands, you know, and just do it.
Right.
So it's a lot of fun.
When did you sort of develop your own kind of individual thing? Your own, seems like you were just goofing around at that time, sort of.
Well, that's about all you can do when you're not even making enough to live, you know.
Right. When did it really become a viable livelihood, playing guitar and singing?
Not until the first album came out last year.
And who recruited you for that album? Who discovered you? Obviously, you were discovered if you were playing with all those people.
Well, I made an album with my band, Fear Itself.
Fear Itself?
Yeah.
Are they still together?
No.
No?
No. But we made an album, and... as I say, that's when I went electric, because not when we made an album, but when I first got them together, because I couldn't hear myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a pickup for the guitar and an amp. By then, of course, I had steel strings. And we didn't get paid for any. It's a real rip story, and I don't even like to talk about it anymore because it brings me down.
Yeah, I know the club owners take advantage of a lot of performers.
Oh, club owners do, but not only that, but this producer that signed us did, and the record company did. And
Okay.
To all the groups, not just us. He signed a whole bunch of groups and did it to him.
Yeah.
And so, after that, I went back after I was in New York, the first time I went back to Atlanta, got the group together, came back, made an album, nothing happened. And we came to Chicago and played Barnaby's. We got fired the first night for not being a soul band.
Yeah, right, up on the loft, right? Up in the air.
Yeah, you play up in that little
Yeah,
place.
I've played up there.
Not one of my favorite places. I'm so glad it's closed.
It's torn down.
And good. And and let me see. Well, then we went back to New York. Of course, our producer and our manager and everything had nothing to do with this. They wouldn't accept our phone calls. you know, they sent us out here with no contract in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff. So that was the end of them. And we moved to Woodstock. We got a new bass player, and we were playing the original Woodstock festivals,
mm-hmm.
which went on for about 5 years, I guess. So we were up there every summer. So finally we just moved up there. And
was this a five-piece band?
No, it was just me and three guys. Just four people.
Quartet. Doing all your songs or other people's songs? Or
about half and half.
Was it like cooperative kind of band, or were you the leader?
Well, I was the leader because no one got there on time, and I had to get the equipment there on time, and no one remembered the changes.
Right.
I don't like working with bands. No, I don't. But they're a nice bunch of guys. I mean, I love them, but I wouldn't work with them or anyone else, mm-hmm. you know? And anyhow, so we moved to Woodstock, and I quit the group and began to play by myself, and then discovered I could hear myself, you know, so I began to really play. And then I just sort of wrote out the contract with this creep, and it's almost up now. And then when I was playing in a place called Kingston, which is right near Woodstock, at a place called the Holiday Inn, in the bar, and it was the most horrible gig I ever had, you know. But anyhow, so I played there, and Paul Siebel, I don't know if you've heard of mm-hmm. him. I knew him in Woodstock, and he told this guy he used to know that used to produce him, named Peter Siegel, about me. So Peter came up to Holiday Inn and listened and said he wanted to do something. So I went into New York, and we talked about it and everything, and we ended up on Polydor.
Were you playing in New York at all before that?
No way. You cannot get a gig without a record. You can't do it.
Yeah.
And not even just a record. The record company has to call them up and say, oh, we think we were right behind this artist, blah, blah. Then you can get a gig.
And Mr. Siegel thought that he really dug you and then put you on a record. Yeah. Have things been going good for you? Have you been enjoying yourself? Now that you're working and got a record out, two records out, are you enjoying yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do you work a lot of places like Mr. Kelly's? Or
no.
Do you work hippie-oriented sort of music-oriented places as opposed to entertainment?
Usually music-oriented, yeah. And a lot of concerts.
Mm-hmm. Like what?
I played Place des Arts with Bill Withers.
Mm-hmm.
And Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
I mean, not with who, but like what kind of places? You know, like what towns?
Montreal, Westbury, Long Island, Baltimore, Maryland. Actually, it's Owens Mill, Maryland. And then I went on tour with Lily last year for a month.
Uh-huh.
And we played Dallas and Houston and Seattle and all around. And Ohio is my favorite place to play, Cincinnati and Cleveland.
Why?
Because they're nuts, and I love them. They're just terrific, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, you haven't played the right place in Chicago yet. The place you're playing is a nice place to play, and you're probably making some decent bread there, but that's really not...
Not after you get out here and go back.
No, well, probably not. But there are much better places to play here.
For music, huh?
Where all the music freaks go.
Mm.
People that, you know, are music addicts, so to speak.
Mm.
And I hope sometime you can come back and play one of those places. There's a lot of places like that, like the Quiet Night, for instance. Have you heard about that?
Yeah.
Have you been there?
No.
No? How long are you going to be here?
We have another 3 days.
Another 3 days. Have you met anybody from the Quiet Night?
Yeah.
Richard? Mr.
Mm-hmm.
Harding?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
He came over.
That's great. And now you're doing all original material for the most part? All songs that you write?
Yeah, I figure it's a fair play. On the first album they made me do, I had a lot of these songs when I was recording the first album, but mm-hmm. They wanted me to do mostly songs by other people because it's hard. Well, this is what they tell me, that it's easier for the audience or whoever's listening to relate to you if you are a new performer, if you do songs they will recognize. But what they didn't understand was that the songs I do of other people's are not To Live the Impossible Life or whatever, songs
mm-hmm.
like that.
Standards.
They're obscure songs anyway.
Right.
But at least they know the name and it's a Jimi Hendrix song or someone like that.
Right, you did a Traffic tune.
Yeah.
On your first one. Real nice version of that. And what's going to be happening now? You're just going to be touring for a while and wait till the album happens and hopefully doing your own concerts or what?
I don't know.
What is the next step in your mind? I'm interested.
I just follow the music. It comes out
maybe
and I follow.
We just sort of play it by ear. We're not going to be rushed into anything. The idea of it, Lillian,
good.
As we're talking, she came and she said, you know, I envy you too, that you're not being pressured into anything. And we just refuse to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's not a piece of material up for sale. She's a human being, and she has to get something really beautiful out of it. And
yeah, we're all human beings.
Things, you know?
Where are you going next?
Atlanta.
You mean the next gig?
Yeah.
The next one is Atlanta, 12th gig.
Uh-huh. Is that like a folk club? Or?
Yes.
I played there when I was in Atlanta before.
Is this going to be like a homecoming to you, sort of?
Going
back to Atlanta?
All the kitchen.
I don't know.
All your friends,
ex-friends. I don't know if they'll be there or not.
You don't know? Are they playing your record in Atlanta? How's the reception of the record around the country?
The new one is not
yet. How was the reception of the first one?
Well, I would say it was fair for a first record. Uh-huh. And, of course, as much as you know, and you know, how much do you know? You only know what the record company tells you, which is a very small thing.
Could you do that tune you were going to do when I interrupted you? What do you want out of this whole thing? That may be too broad of a question.
Nothing. I just want to be able to play good music.
You really enjoy playing?
Yeah.
Then that's what you want. You want to play. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I want to farm sometime, you know.
Uh-huh.
But if I can't do it this way, I can get any kind of a job, you know.
Right.
But I don't want a Cadillac or a swimming pool or nothing like that. I don't want to sign autographs. I'm sorry, that's embarrassing. I don't like that side of it.
But you do enjoy playing, or do you enjoy entertaining people? You know, do you like to see a bunch of people out in the audience when you're playing, you know, really enjoying themselves? Do you have a feeling that, like, you're laying a good feeling on them, projecting, or do you just enjoy playing yourself? Some people play for themselves. Some people play for the audience. And
it depends on the audience. I play for myself when no one's listening. Mm-hmm.
But she turns her back on the audience. She's playing for herself.
You turn your back on the audience?
Sometimes, if they talk loud enough.
Do you play standing up or sitting down?
Yes, I play standing up. I never sit down. But I like to... Well, what the audiences don't realize is they make the show. You know, I can play what I'm playing right here, or this is even... Even if I played in my room all by myself, I would play it, and I wouldn't make any technical mistakes, probably. But if the audience is there, and they're behind you, they can make an energy level that you just don't put out by yourself. And they make the audience make the show. They really do.
Where do you find the best audiences at? Are they all...
In the most unexpected places.
One night last week, she had a fine audience. They just, it was wonderful. You could tell her music was... You can always tell by her music that she's being received, getting good vibes from the people.
Where was that audience at?
Kelly's.
Mr. Kelly's, right. You enjoy playing for the... this is just... the reason I'm asking you this is because you're playing at Mr. Kelly's here in Chicago. If you weren't, I probably wouldn't ask it of you. Do you enjoy playing for a sort of older crowd?
It's rougher.
A cabaret crowd as opposed to playing for just a strictly concert?
I don't care, but it's rougher. It's not an easy audience, you know? Uh-huh. I mean, you have to, when they don't know quite what you're doing, and they don't know if they like the way you look or not, and stuff like that. But they've been very good. They've been very polite and very nice and very receptive, you know. And I find it really doesn't make any difference how old an audience is. Or, you know, the best audience I ever had was a bunch of kids from about, I guess they were from kindergarten to about eighth grade.
Yeah, in a church. That would be. I can see some very open-minded minds in that age group.
But it really doesn't matter. Older people, younger people, it doesn't matter.
Huh?
Kids are the ones that will come into a gallery and understand paintings for adults won't.
Right, they can get into it because they have open minds.
And they don't think, if I say that, I'll be embarrassed. And, if I say that, I'll be showing what an idiot I am.
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff.
Inhibitions.
They just say it.
Right. How many places that you've worked at have you headlined?
Have I headlined?
Yeah, I mean, it's been your thing, Ellen McElwainy's gig.
I don't want to do that yet.
In Philadelphia, Grand Ole's Lair. And she's going back there in February again.
We happen to do well there, but I don't like it.
And it's a brand new club. He wasn't known. And she did well, and she got terrific reviews from the Evening Bulletin, which is a square paper, as you want, not the Underground. And, of course, the Underground paper, she got two full pages of write-up. And so we're going back there.
And you said that you try to keep away from Ellen.
She's not ready to headline.
I see.
She's not known sufficiently for that.
Uh huh.
In other words, Mr. Kelly, some months ago, tried to have her come in there as headline.
It's ridiculous.
She's not ready for that.
Just sort of getting around right now.
Let her get known and let her do it calmly. There's no use in big shock. There's no rush.
Right.
And there's no use in charging. That's what I, you know what, another thing I hate, which brings to mind headlining and all that stuff, is the prices that are charged at concerts. I don't like to play to more than 3,000 people because they can't see you and they can't hear you.
I agree.
And like in Madison Square Garden, that's nothing but a ripoff.
No,
I would never
obviously,
do that.
Obviously, 20,000 people?
That's ridiculous, man. And the guy's way, way up 5 miles away on the top of the ceiling paid $650 or something. Uh-huh. And they can't see, and they can't hear nothing but a bunch of echoes. You know, it's ridiculous.
Are you going to try to set any precedents
I'm
in that kind of...
Never.
In that realm of... most entertainers, if they're just playing music for a living, will play anywhere for anything, as long as they get paid for it. They don't care.
Uh-huh. That's why they call Roy Buchanan crazy, because he won't take...
Yeah, he won't do it either.
You know, Roy is a real fine person.
There's not too many people in the music industry that are really, that are setting any kind of precedence or have any criteria for where they'll play and what they'll do. Most of them will do anything.
Lily won't do it either because they can't see you. They can't hear you. It's cheating them. It's cheating the audience, you know. And like those guys who flew into the so-called Woodstock Festival, which was 60 miles away in White Lake, and no one from Woodstock even went, you know. But anyhow, like that was, only the first 30 rows of people could see, and only the first maybe 25 rows could hear.
Well, that's a different kind of thing. That's more like